Gen X ladies, have you ever stopped, took a breather, and thought, hey, is this it? I mean, is this all? Then life hits you with menopause and midlife crisis. Well, that's what happened to me. But ladies, it's not game over. Oh no, we've got to get up and claim our space and fight back. My name's Simona, and come join me as I document my life journey, discover midlife solutions one step at a time. I will present various ways to improve our lives and increase our self-care. I will interview inspiring people, share with you the best kept secrets to a successful and meaningful life. So let's get rocking! Couch to Fire will inspire you to get unstuck and venture out of your comfort zone and ignite your fire within. Couch to Fire. Get your life back. Hello and welcome. I have a fabulous guest today. Her name is Roxana Hussein, and she's a transformative coach. She is a wonderful lady who knows a lot about things and a queen of overcoming fear. Welcome, Roxana.
Oh, thank you for having me, Simona. It's a pleasure to be here.
Roxana is one of my cohorts in our podcast journey. She has a podcast also called Personal Power Boost. And we're in this journey to spread our views on our lives and how to help other people. And one of these things in my journey is the fear of just failure. And Roxana reached out to me because she saw my look on my on these Zoom calls that we're at. And I just get so concerned and so wrapped up. And she's been so kind enough to talk about fear and how it has helped her. And maybe she will give me some pointers to help me in my journey.
I hope so, Simona. So I think that the first thing with fear is that we need to get onto the same page in terms of what we mean by fear. You know, what is fear to us? So in my mind, fear is an emotion. Mm-hmm. It's an emotion that is triggered by a perceived threat, something that could happen that affects our safety or our well-being in some way, shape or form. Fear is not to be confused by danger. And this is something that our minds are really hard to make the distinction between what fear is and what danger is. So danger is imminent. Danger is you're in a road and a bus is coming, or you are eye to eye with a saber-toothed tiger, or somebody is grabbing your bag on the street. You know, that is danger. And fear is different in the sense that it is a perceived threat. So there's a possibility that something could go wrong that affects my well-being in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like for me, it's fear of failure, like looking stupid in front of people on a Facebook Live. So for me, it's like also that, yeah. And also making a mistake in front of everybody too. So yes.
Yeah. And I get that. So the thing with anything that's public facing or anything that causes shame or embarrassment is all connected to our primitive nature, to who we are, how we've evolved. Because once upon a time ago, if we were shunned from our tribe because we weren't perceived to be a contributor or good enough, that would have meant death.
Right.
That would have meant death. You would have been out of the tribe. And you just have to look at the animal world to see how that's played out. As soon as an elephant loses its way and is no longer part of the herd, that elephant is now exposed to danger. Other animals will prey on that elephant. And so it's really, even in the animal world, you know, they work really hard to keep all of their pack, all of their herd together. Now, our minds are not that different. Even though, you know, those times no longer exist, our primitive mind still feels those same levels of danger, even though they don't exist anymore for us. So when you think about public speaking, when you're thinking, Simona, about being on video, what if you do go wrong? What if that does happen? What do you perceive to be the worst case scenario for you?
Being laughed at, I guess, or just being like, oh, someone's just going to not like what I'm saying and I failed on the, in their eyes. But I guess it's just me being, I don't know, vulnerable about what everybody says.
Yeah, which is natural. It's a natural, it's a natural feeling to have. So I guess what we need to think about is how do we use that feeling? How do we think about that feeling in a way that serves us? Mm-hmm. Rather than avoiding it, rather than thinking, I don't want to think about fear because it's going to make, you know, me really uncomfortable. And, you know, you probably remember if you had a fear as a child, like I used to have a fear that there was something behind the door as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And the more I thought about it, the more intense my emotions got about it. And the bigger and bigger this perceived monster would become in my mind.
Right.
I've got to breathe, right? I'm right trying to grasp breath now because I'm so scared. I've wound myself up to that point and I can't move. I can't actually physically get up and check if there's a monster there or not because I'm like debilitated.
It's kind of like my daughter. My daughter will go, Mom, can I have some ice cream? Mom, can you go with me? I said, go get it yourself if you want it. And then she'll say, Mom, can you go with me? And I'm like, there's no one there. Don't be scared. It's okay. You know, I'm 3 steps away, you know, or 30 steps away from you. But it's the same kind of feeling, like they're this a monster about to jump ahead. But you know, in your mind, there's nothing there. Well, as parents, we do, but not as kids.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that comes down to evidence. Mm-hmm. Because over our lifetimes, we've come to know that there is nothing behind the door because there never has been. We've had years and years and years of having these thoughts and then concluding there's nothing there. So we create the evidence that we needed. And I think that saying to yourself, there's nothing to be scared of, isn't helpful. What we need to do is say to ourselves, let's create the evidence that there is nothing to fear, that there isn't a perceived threat.
Right.
And it's about creating that evidence. So how do we create the evidence to do that?
Right.
So I have a little strategy I could share with you.
Please do, because I need it.
So what we do, so this is almost like, I mean, I could try to send this to you actually, Simona, because it's a grid that you need to create.
Okay.
So what you do is you create this table, and in the corner, in the first column, you would write down your fear. So what is your fear? Whatever it might be. So in this case, I'm fearing being on screen, speaking to my public, whoever they may be. Okay, so that's your fear. Then what you do is you write down in the next column how likely it is for that fear to be realized. So what's the possibility of it happening? So in this case, you might write, there's probably a 60, 70, 80% chance that I'm going to mess this up because I'm new to this and I'm not familiar and I might lose my train of thought or whatever evidence you've been telling yourself and the fearful thoughts have been telling you around this. So you pick a percentage.
Okay.
Then what you do is you change your state. So by that, I mean, you take a walk, you listen to music, you have a dance, you work out, you do something that reduces your cortisol levels and just elevates your endorphins and makes you feel amazing. And then you come, so you take a good 30 minutes to completely change your state and not be thinking about the fear and the 60, 70 or 80% that you gave it.
Okay.
So you come back, you sit down at the sheet. And now what I would want you to do is write down all of the evidence to suggest how unlikely it is to happen. Yeah, how unlikely it is to happen. So the first thing might be, it's never happened to me. I've never messed up when I've done it in the short time that I've been doing it. The second thing might be, I know the subject I'm going to talk about really well. I've done all my research. So that's another bit of evidence. If people chime in with any questions, well, I'm ready for those because I roughly have an idea of who's listening and I know what kind of questions they're going to have. And your other evidence might be, well, of all the people that I've seen and all the people that inspire me, none of them have made such a blunder that they couldn't recover from. So it's never really happen to anybody that I know either. So in that systematic way, you start looking for all the evidence of how unlikely it is that your fear will be realized. Once you've done that, then what you do is now you're going to give a new score. So based on all this new evidence, what's the probability of your fear being realized? Now, at this point, you might drop from 70% all the way down to about 20% because you've created the evidence, right? 20%, right. Might be 15%, might be 10%. So what you do now, so that percentage point has drastically gone down, but it hasn't gone down completely because there's still this little niggle that there could be a possibility.
Right.
So that's when we work to mitigate that risk. So if you're still left with a 15% possibility that our fear can be realized, you then prepare a strategy. What do I do? What are the two or three things that I can do to make sure that I don't mess up? So when it comes to any kind of public speaking, the obvious things that we can all do is have some notes to hand so we don't lose our chain of thought and it kind of keeps us on track. We can find out who's going to be part of the audience. Like, how many people am I talking to? What kind of questions are they likely to come up with? I do a bit of homework to see who shows up on these things. Mm-hmm. And luckily for us, when we do podcasts, we can do them in an environment where actually if we do make a mess up, we can edit them out, can't we?
So right.
That's perfect. We're mitigating the risk. So if I go off on a tangent, you can just, when you finish, you can just be like, right, I don't need all of that bit.
Right.
Or if you say something or stumble over your words, you can just edit that out. So this is perfect. This helps us to relax because we're just like, there are no wrongs really, because if there's anything we don't need, we can take that out. When we're doing a Facebook Live, similar sort of thing. I mean, how many people jump on live with you? At that very time when you're doing it, there's probably a handful of people, maybe 5, 10, 15 people.
Right.
With a live, you can edit it later. You know, you can always, if there's something that you do or say that you really think, oh, that wasn't very, you know, that's not what I meant to say, or that's not how I wanted it to come across, you can actually, yeah, 10, 15 people have seen it, but before the whole world sees it, you can actually edit a live.
Can you? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you can edit a live, totally. Yeah, totally.
Oh.
So, you know, you can do things like that that help you relax, and you'll know that that's the way. And the other thing to know, and this isn't part of my strategy, but really, Simona, when you mess up, people love that. You know, people like that because you're being real, you're being vulnerable. And when you're being real and vulnerable, people love that connection with you. And even in a real life conversation, when you're having a face-to-face conversation with a bunch of friends and you're sharing your information or your journey about something, we don't all say everything beautifully and perfectly.
That's true.
You know, and that's how people want us to come across like that. They want us to come across as who we are and not this polished version of how we see news anchors or how we see people on TV who have auto cues and who knows what else props to help them keep on track.
Right. Right. And I've been in the TV news for so long. So they have scripts, they have lighting, they have makeup. It looks perfect. And they're paid to be that way, you know, and perform that way. So, and just being the normal Simona, they must love me because I have so many imperfections.
We all do. We all do. And that's what we, when we go on Facebook, when we find people we want to connect with in social media or in any other world like that, that's not television, that's not mainstream television, it's because they remind us of us. So when you polish that up too much, you're going to remind them of them anymore. People that we like are people that remind us of us because of the way they talk, the way they look, what they're saying. There'll be something that people like about you because you're keeping it real on some level. And that's the thing that I think if we start to think that way, rather than trying to aspire to be like everybody else on TV or everybody else on some polished social media channels, I think that we're moving away from our audience, the people that actually need us, the people that we can actually right. help and serve, because they'll be like, actually, she's too perfect now, you know.
Right, right, right. And they can connect with us, so that's good. It's good for me. Yeah,
that's good for me. Yeah, exactly. That's what we want. So this is the strategy. So your first step is write down your fear. Write down your fear, what it is. Write down the percentage, the probability of that fear being realized. In the third column, you list, after you've changed your state, you list all the evidence of how unlikely that fear is to be realized. Hopefully you'll have a long list. And then in the fourth column, you write down a new percentage. Now, based on all of that evidence, how unlikely is it to happen? Or how likely is it to happen? And then by right. then, you've dropped your percentage point right down. So for that niggle that's left, 5%, 10%, 15%, you create a strategy. So what? So based on the fact that you still think I might mess up a little bit, or I might miss my point, or I might, you know, stumble over my words, or somebody might say, ask me a question and I haven't thought it through. Like, what is that deep fear? Like, face it, what is it? Then you make a strategy based on that, and you've mitigated all of your risk pretty much. Brings it down to actually the possibility of that fear being realized is now almost 0%, because I've done all of these things.
These are great steps. I mean, I'd never thought of it that way, in the sense of, first of all, as you say, that it's not a danger for us anymore. We're not going to be killed for fear in the beginning. So that was like an aha moment for me. I'm like, okay, amazing. Got it in my head. And then all the four steps of just, you know, just deleting the percentages that my mind has over my fear, that is huge for me. So it's just so helpful.
Well, for me, it's really helpful to have a strategy, a way, because I'm quite a logical person. Mm-hmm. And I like to give my clients a strategy that they can use and really calm their conscious mind down, because, you know, we have the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. Now, subconsciously, the fears that you're feeling are coming from a primitive place. And what's happening is that those fears are there because they're saying to you, there's a perceived threat that you could mess up this Facebook Live or whatever it is that you're going to do. So all the time, what we should be aiming to do is to feed that primitive part of our mind the evidence that it needs to say, I've got this, I'm handling this, I get the alert that you're sending me that I need to prepare better. So I'm going to sit down with my strategy for the next 10 minutes or 1 hour or however long it takes you, and create the evidence to be able to say to fear when it comes up, it's good, I've got it. I've got it all covered. I've got my questions ready. I've got my card ready. I know who's coming on. I know how to edit it afterwards if I do mess up. I'm good. Thank you for the alert, but I don't need you right now.
You know? I love it.
And there is another way that I think about fear, which is a bit left field and not really something that I've heard many people talk about, but, you know, we have our five senses, which are here to serve us and help us to create a map of the world. And that's how, as children, we take in the whole world. But there's other things as well that are going on. So we have imagination, we have intuition, we have critical thinking. There's a lot of other things that exist within us that don't get the same kind of airtime, if you like, as right. our senses do. Mm-hmm. So I always think about fear as, what if fear was just your imagination and your intuition? So intuition being your future kind of sensing what could happen Mm-hmm. And your imagination, which is taking you. So when you think about your fear, you're visualizing what could go wrong. So that's your imagination taking you to this place of, well, these things could go wrong. And you can sometimes, if you let yourself sit with that fear for long enough, you can visualize yourself messing up, right? You can see it happening. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what if all fear was, if you kind of remove the intense emotions that we fear, park them for a minute, and just understand fear to be a collaboration of your imagination and your intuition, just giving you some profound, insightful alerts, a signal saying, are you prepared? This is what could happen. Just taking you there so you can be prepared. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Kind of like a coach, right?
Yes. Your mind is coaching you. Exactly. It's when the emotion comes in, and the emotion kicks in really quickly. It kicks in like in a nanosecond, doesn't it, when we have fear. So we don't have time to just sit back. And I always like to do things in slow motion. So when a fear has come up, I dissect it. Like, what triggered it? Triggered it for me? And really go into slow motion, trying to understand. So then I had that feeling, and then that feeling led to that thought. And then that thought led to this image in my head. And so when you sit with a fear and you kind of dissect it and try to understand how one thing leads to another, how it spirals very quickly to this descent of just carnage. You know, this is what's going to happen to you if you don't nip it in the bud, and if you don't do something straight away.
Right.
So based on that, you know, I have many fears. I've had fears. If I grew up, I was scared of everything that you can imagine, which is why I've spent a lot of time thinking about fear. I was scared of the dark. I was scared of dogs. I was scared of spicy food, like literally petrified of spicy food. And I'm Asian and we eat spicy food all the time. And I was so scared of it. I was scared of strangers. I was such a shy child, so shy. I was scared of crows. I was scared of, like, I'm talking like panicking, kind of scared of all of these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it was because I was quite an anxious child, mm-hmm. quite sensitive. So I used to pick up on things and just worry about what could happen. Like the worst, I used to go to the worst case scenario very quickly. And so as an adult, as I got into adulthood, I started unpicking, why am I so scared of things? Why am I scared of that one thing? And I'd pick one thing at a time and just try to dissect. When does fear kick in? And how does that signal turn into a full-on intense me palpitating and having, like, not a panic attack, but almost like verging on a panic attack? How do I get to that place? And it's through these kind of strategies. So then coming up with evidence to give the mind, calm it down. So if you think about where that's coming from, it's coming from your ego, the fear. Your ego is insecure and it's constantly looking to be heard and validated. So then you say, instead of ignoring the fear, you say, okay, fear, you're here to tell me something. Okay, good. I'm going to sit down and create some evidence for you. It's a bit like a child, you know, here's the evidence to prove that you're not going to drown when you go for a swim lesson, you know, which is something I had to work with my daughter on last year, because she was so scared of going into the adult pool to swim, although she had a fight and she was fully ready, but she just thought she was going to drown and not be in any kind of control. So I had to do this very exercise with her, and it works with everybody, no matter what age they are or what they're going through.
I totally believe it, because I was thinking about this, and it's like if you have a anxiety over things, you just have to walk it through in your mind, like, hey, here are the details. What's the percentage? How can we reduce this? Are you prepared? That kind of stuff, which is like, a scientific method instead of just emotional for me, which is so good and so helpful.
Exactly. And I think it will serve you to use it whenever you need with anything, like not just for one thing, but try it out with different things and try it on different people as well. So you mentioned your daughter having a fear of the dark to go downstairs. Try it with her. You like sit down and say, let's do this together, because it worked with my daughter, her fear of swimming. And I think when we try to talk ourselves out of a fear, it's really hard when the emotions are intense and they're at their peak, because that's not when we're resourceful or thoughtful or collected or measured. But if we were to say, okay, well, now that I've calmed down from that fear a little bit, let me sit down and use a strategy. And everything that you write down in your list to create the evidence that it's unlikely to happen have to be real things rooted in real life. It needs to be real evidence. Like, you can't try to trick your mind into thinking this isn't going to happen. You know, it has to be real evidence, because then you will believe it. You will read it and be like, of course that's true. Of course that's true. In the same way that you would try to convince your child that, you know, here's the evidence for why it's perfectly safe to go downstairs in the evening.
Right.
The doors are locked. The windows are locked. We did all the checking ourselves. There's nothing downstairs. Here's a light. If you want to take a light downstairs with you, if that helps you. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll do things to help them to feel okay with it. And it's the same thing for our ego. We're giving it the evidence that it needs to just calm down, be okay with this.
I love this. Anna, thank you for opening my mind with all this wonderful tools that help me with overcoming fear. I mean, it's just like big for me.
You're welcome. Well, let me know how you get on with this, because I think it's going to really help you enormously to overcome this fear of being on screen and being on Facebook. Because I think, and also repetition, you know, once you do it a few times as well, you'll find that you become okay with it.
Yeah. I totally believe it. I think once you keep doing it and being consistent, so that's what I have to do too, is just being consistent and being okay with telling my fears to go away. I got this.
Exactly. Love it.
Roxana, thank you so much for coming on and just sharing with us how to overcome fear and help us with our anxieties and situations. I mean, I think this is huge for me and all of my listeners too. It'll just totally help us in life and things that we want to accomplish.
My pleasure. It's my pleasure. It's been amazing.
And they can contact you. I will make sure that I have all your information if you want to be a part of Roxana's coaching. I think you coach too, right? Is that right?
I do coach. So I have my podcast, which is, as you mentioned, Personal Power Boost. And I also have coaching programs. I do one-to-one coaching and I do group coaching, which I'm sliding into, which I'm really excited about. So you can find out all the details at my website, which is www.roxanahussain.com.
Fabulous. Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on, and I so appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Simone. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Couch to Fire. I hope this podcast sparks something in you to take action to live your best life. If you're interested in joining me in this podcast and have something inspiring to share, please contact me. Couch to Fire. Live your best life.